Hey there, and welcome to Beta Talks, the podcast in which we talk to friends from the development community. I'm Rick.
And I am Oscar. Hi Rick, how are you doing?
I'm doing great actually. I've been working with Azure AD B2C, and I wanted to actually work that into a website which would be hosted on Azure Static Web Apps.
Mm-hmm. Is this for your user group?
Yeah, for the user group .NET site. We are a Microsoft user group in the southern Netherlands, and we actually wanted to provide people with social logins as well. And initially, I thought, well, this is going to be implementation in the web front end, right? But since we are hosting on static web apps, you can configure your OpenID configuration if you run on the paid plan for static web apps, which actually means that I can point towards Azure AD B2C to be a login provider. Mm-hmm. And then inside of B2C, I could, within one afternoon, configure LinkedIn, Google, Twitter, Microsoft account, GitHub. All of those authentication mechanisms worked within an afternoon. Mm-hmm. And by putting all of the configuration in staticwebapps.config.json, it actually provides the authentication for me. So I only configured it and it works now. So it's actually pretty impressive.
And you were already a fan, right?
I was already a fan of static web apps, yes. And this doesn't help in getting it to be less.
Yeah, I was at a client last Friday, and they had all their front end. They had multiple front ends, but they had it running on storage accounts. Mm-hmm. So my obvious question was, did you consider, because they were doing all kinds of things with custom headers there and stuff. So we also, like, within 30 minutes, we had the stuff up and running in parallel build pipeline. It's like, it's that it's Friday and no one knows about this, otherwise we'll just push the prod.
Yeah.
It was ridiculous.
It is.
No, yeah. But it's a cool product. And we are talking about it a lot, but I think it deserves it.
Yeah, but what you're actually seeing is that it looks like more and more services that Azure is adding are combinations of certain services, and then the way of them working together made a lot easier because the platform knows how to do this.
Yeah, we discussed this before, right?
It's yes.
Like we have some basic services. We're up to a couple of levels now with abstraction, and then you get really those use case driven new services that do one thing, combining a few other things, which you could build in the past, but now it's just there and your scenario works.
Yeah, and I actually I read somewhere, and I'm not entirely sure if it's true because I haven't checked, but I think that Heroku Free is stopping.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's
Heroku
kind of in the news. Yeah.
Will no longer be the free service. So I'm expecting a lot of people to turn and look at static web apps for those types of offerings.
Yeah, very good.
So who's our friend of the day?
Our friend of the day is Scott Hanselman. Scott has been a developer for 30 years and has been blogging at Hanselman.com for 20 years. He works in open source on .NET and the Azure Cloud for Microsoft out of his home office in Portland, Oregon. Scott has been podcasting for over 800 episodes of Hanselman.com over 15 years and 700 episodes of Azure Friday. He's written a number of technical books and spoken in person to over 1 million developers worldwide. He is also on TikTok, which was very likely a huge mistake. Welcome, Scott.
Welcome.
How's it going? Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's going amazing. We have a very special guest today.
Yeah.
All our guests are special, but this feels like royalty almost, right? On a technical podcast.
I think that's largely overstated, but I appreciate that.
Yeah, but I do think that you have a certain status within at least the .NET community, and then probably with everything going on right now with open source and .NET becoming cross-platform. I think you are a well-known face for a lot of people in the industry.
That's very kind of you to say. I am very fortunate when people Google for stuff, they tend to find me sometimes. So yeah, I do the best I can to put out good information.
Yeah, and you do so on a multitude of platforms, right? Because like your bio says, you do stuff on Hanselman.com, and you have your podcast, but then also we have the Azure Friday videos, and we have your own videos, and then you're on Instagram, I think, and you're even on TikTok. So where do you find the time to manage all of those resources?
Well, the funny part is that all of that is actually not my day job. It's just enthusiasm. I'm just kind of a professional enthusiast. TikTok kind of popped up in the last couple of years, and I jumped on, I think, middle of last year during the pandemic, and have found it to be a very joyous and fun place. And since I already had some familiarity with YouTube, creating the video for it was pretty straightforward. I have taken a bit of a break from my blog after I hit 20 years. I think I'm about 6 months into a bit of a hiatus on the blog. It was basically every Tuesday and Thursday for 20 years from April of 2002.
Wow.
The podcast has 855 episodes and Azure Friday has 750 episodes. But I just kind of go where the fun is. And right now I'm having a lot of fun on TikTok. But then I'll also take that same content. I'll upload it to Instagram. I'll upload it to YouTube Shorts. But again, it's, I mean, I think I made $6 last month on TikTok. I mean, it's just a fun thing to do. It's not anything
serious. It's not a big side hustle income-wise.
Well, but see, that's the other difference between me and like other quote-unquote content creators is that I don't really take it seriously. Like if it was my job, yeah, I would be a problem and I would need to like get, I don't know, like a podcast editor and rent a studio and like do the whole thing. But I don't like, I'm just messing around. You know what I mean? So what I think I do pretty well is, consistency, even though it is not of the quality of something like your production.
Yeah. But in the end, it all goes, it's all about content, right? And the value of the content that you bring, because for instance, some of the episodes of .NET Rocks aren't necessarily recorded in a studio. I mean, sometimes you can hear that stuff is recorded live somewhere, but the content works, right? So it's not necessarily about the form. It's about what you have to say.
Yeah. For me, I don't like the word content or content creators. For me, it's education or it's entertainment. So for me, it's edutainment, right? And if it provides a little bit of edutainment to someone and it gets them thinking about like, oh, wow, I didn't know I could do that. That's my whole thing. Like yesterday, last night, if you look at my latest TikTok, I took a Commodore 64, old 40-year-old computer, and I put it on the internet by using a Wi-Fi to serial modem adapter. So it's a little
I saw that. I didn't know it existed. That's amazing.
Yeah, it's really great. So, you know, certainly not my invention, but there's a gentleman at cpmstuff.com who sells this Wi-modem. And it's a bridge. And it's basically one of the wonderful old pieces of technology that lies to old tech to bring it into the modern world. So I'm sitting here with a Commodore 64. It's original. It's not an emulator. It's a real 6502, 6510 processor. I got the floppy disk working, and then I pulled it off. And now I emulate a floppy disk with a Raspberry Pi. So the Commodore 64 doesn't know it's being lied to. And then the modem, you actually say not ATDT and then a number for the phone. You say ATDT and then your SSID, and that puts you on the Wi-Fi. And why did I do that? Because a bunch of people on the internet then get to say, oh my goodness, I had no idea I could do that. And then maybe they'll go off and they'll support that small business and they'll get excited about retro, or they'll start teaching people, or they'll take it to a school and they'll teach young people about history. So it's half for fun, but also it's to get people's brains kind of going, oh, wow, I didn't know that existed. And then they run, and go have fun.
That's actually something that we've discussed several times here in our podcast, that it's the most awesome moment when you try and convey a message and you see that sparkle in someone's eye. I mean, that's the moment.
The connection with something, right?
Yeah, that's what you're learning
or something
for.
You didn't know existed. It's so much fun. Yeah, well, and we also talked, we talked to a previous guest in the podcast also about, like, it's almost hinting the edutainment there. It's like, if you're doing something for fun and not for, this is your assignment, it's supposed to be in these constraints and we need to sell this product or anything like that. But it's for you, it's fun. Like, you can also go wider and you cannot just stay with the tech, but you can, yeah, do all kinds of things that make you happy and probably, yeah, you connect with some other people there.
Yeah, and your point about not trying to sell anything. Now, in the instance of this little Y modem, I really like to support small businesses, smaller companies. So I'm not selling that guy's stuff. I don't know that gentleman, but I think it's cool, and it also happens to be a small business. So then that my little bit of lending my audience or lending my eyeballs can help that individual. That has been a thing that I've been blessed to be able to do over the last several years as my audience has gotten bigger, is if I tweet about a book, I'll get a very nice email later from the author of the book that says, oh yeah, that was the kick that my product needed or my book needed to like get to the next level. So like on my desk here, you can't really see, but I just have a pile of old, you know, I'm holding these up like old circuit boards and stuff, but they're actually reinventions and reimaginings of old technology done by small companies, small businesses. So I love to like lend eyeballs and lend my audience to them. And then I love getting that little note at the end that says, oh yeah, you know, we sold 200 widgets.
Yeah, we had a guest on the show, you may know him, Jan de Dobbelaar, who called it the Hanselman effect every time you mention something of him, like everything explodes in his log.
That's true, yeah.
Jan is a very lovely gentleman, and I like working with
him. He's a great
Jan.
Guy, yeah.
One of the things that also stands out for people following you, Scott, is that you visit thrift shops, right?
Yes, they're very big here in the U.S.,
yeah.
But I also don't see any reason to buy expensive things if a perfectly good used thing is in the same shop.
But that is not necessarily a popular opinion, I think. Is there a reason for you to explicitly move towards those thrift shops?
That is a good, complicated, and multi-layered question.
Yeah.
So
I prepared.
Well, I mean, so if you one some people argue, oh well, you have money, then you should go and buy the best, greatest thing. But you know, without being trying to be too much of like an eco warrior, why do I need to pull molecules out of the rock that we're sitting on, then burn a bunch of stuff to ship those molecules in a boat from China to me when the molecules are already here? You know? And if someone can have something or create something that will sit around for 50 years or 100 years and be useful, I'd much rather do that than to get some single-use plastic or some garbage. So, you know, I'm very blessed to have some money, and I could certainly go and buy, you know, winter coats for the whole family that are brand new. But we went to the thrift shop just this week in preparation for winter, which is coming up in a cut 3 months. And we found effectively brand new, high-end quality winter coats for the kids for $5 and $10. I just can't imagine spending $100 on a brand new coat when there's perfectly good coats already out there. And the same thing applies for other things. In fact, not only do I go to thrift shops, Rick, but I also sell stuff because I don't like throwing things away. So just this weekend, I went and met an older gentleman and sold him a 1938 projector. So like an actual film projector that I had. And I'd been sitting on this thing because it played like, you know, 8mm, very, very old black and white film. And I felt like, you know, he wanted it. I wasn't using it. It was sitting on my shelf. I had long ago digitized all of my family's films. So I have them on, you know, in digital format on three different things. But he really was excited about it. So I could throw it away. I could take it to a thrift shop, or I could hand it personally to another individual who will then care for it and share it and go on. So all of the things that I have end up being paid forward to someone else. So yeah, that kind of pervades my whole philosophy and my whole vibe.
But that is actually a very good idea, I think, because especially if you see now, if you buy a printer and then you need to buy ink, it's most of the times more expensive to buy new ink than to just buy the new printer. We're living in a throwaway society, or at least a lot of stuff is built to only last for a small amount of time and then to be thrown away and repurposed as something else. So I do think that it's Yeah,
you see that with the right to repair. What is that? That you now have with some devices. I think it's really good to, because I remember like having an old amplifier or something and bringing that to your neighbor who did electronics, and he replaced the bit and it worked again for years. And now he's like, I need a new one. Kids would think that.
That Commodore 64, I had a 1541 disk drive, and I turned it on, and it burst into flames. Not burst into flames, but a magic smoke, you know, came out of the
smoke
capacitor.
Test.
It cost me, I don't know, 14 cents to replace the capacitor and about 20 minutes of soldering, and now it's back.
Yeah, hardware used to be like that.
Yeah. Well, there's some wonderful things, like there's a laptop called the Framework laptop.
Yeah.
That is, you know, and then of course our friends at like iFixit, the right to repair is, I think, a very important thing. So yeah, I don't know. Maybe I'm just a visible person that refuses to be wasteful and buy a bunch of crap. But yeah.
But it's a good message as you're sending across. So I think it's power to you for that one.
Well, I think you see it in like I heard Scott speaking before about not wasting keystrokes even.
Yeah.
So like if you do something, why do it just for this one purpose or one? Like, I think it's really embedded in you somehow. And it's really good that people, because of your exposure, other people will be introduced, because some people might not even know about thrift shops or that it used to be repairable, your stuff. Like,
yeah, well, I do have to give full credit to my parents, specifically my dad. Mm-hmm. My mom was a zookeeper and my dad was a firefighter. And because many of the houses here in the U.S. are made of wood, firefighting is a very popular thing, mm-hmm. as opposed mm-hmm. to stone or stucco. And, you know, trying to keep things going was a big part of his whole personality, and keep things alive and keep things running. And I have a very, very clear memory where we would go to this place called the dump. I don't know if you have these places where you, like, you fill the back of your pickup truck with mm-hmm. garbage, you take it to the dump, and you pay to dump your trash into mm-hmm. this big garbage pile. And there's the trash part, like food and, you know, waste. But then there's the, like, I have an old dresser or I have an old whatever. And I have a very specific memory of going to the dump, and he wasn't there to dump stuff. He was there to catch other people dumping stuff. And one of the cars next to him was pushing out a barbecue. And he was like, stop, what are you doing? It's a perfectly good barbecue. And he like ran over to the guy and grabbed this barbecue. And then he got in trouble because the dump doesn't want you to remove stuff. Like it's right only, you know, yeah. you're not supposed to read only. And then he came home and we took a wire brush and a sandblaster and he wired and cleaned the whole thing and then painted it. And like a week later, we're eating on that barbecue that would have been sitting there otherwise. And that was the family barbecue for 20 years. So that just really stuck with me. And that applies to computers and legacy software and systems and, you know, all things. Waste not, want not.
And probably 20 or 30 years from now, your kid somewhere will tell the same story. Yeah, well, I got into thrift shopping because of my dad, because he took us to the thrift shop. So that's...
I think it's a healthy attitude.
Yeah, I think
so. Like, not even... I have to explain it because it's normal. Like,
yeah. That one.
And yeah, you need to pass some of these values on. Maybe you didn't get them passed on. And then, yeah, if you can see them at certain individuals that you that are a bit more visible, yeah. I think it's a good thing. Definitely.
I would like to dive into tech a bit more, Scott, if you don't mind. Maybe for people who haven't been around as long as Oscar and I have, could you maybe explain how your journey at Microsoft went? So you joined somewhere 2007, I think.
Yeah, I've been at Microsoft 15 years this month. I just literally last week I got my 15 year like congratulations email.
Oh yeah, I saw you're trying to get a message on your
Yeah, so they send you these big lucite crystals, and mm-hmm. I have a 5 year and a 10 year, and then the 15 year is really big, and each of them is a different color. So there's like a green, blue, red, bright crystal, and then you put it by the sun and it makes like a rainbow color. And the 15 year apparently has an engraving, and it usually just says Scott Hanselman and then like years of service. But somehow, I don't know if I hacked into it or they changed the tool, but now I can put any text that I want. So hopefully it'll say love Beyonce. but there's some concern that maybe they're going to catch me. So I'll let you know if that, that sneaks through.
I already saw that you tried that. So there might be someone else at Microsoft following you on Twitter.
Yeah, but hopefully if they say no, then I have the collective, like the people will rise up in revolt and support me. And they'll be like, all right, fine. You can have
Beyonce. We will help.
Yeah. But I've only been at Microsoft 15 years, which means that I'm now, because April of this year was 30 years in tech. Mm-hmm. So now I'm finally at my halfway point where I've been at Microsoft exactly the amount of time that I wasn't at Microsoft, which is going to be a little bit challenging for me kind of emotionally, because I have always thought of my time at Microsoft to be a time of service, like when someone joins government from industry, and then they do their work in government, and then they leave, and they go back to industry. Mm-hmm. So I always thought of myself as going to Microsoft to support and advocate for people like me working with Microsoft tech downstream. But if now I've been here longer, now I guess I'm an insider. You know what I mean? Because I worked at Nike, I worked at Intel, I worked in training, you know, like I did all bunch of work, I worked in banking. I did a bunch of work for 15 years. But all anybody remembers is the Microsoft part, the last part.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So like, what do? I quit now and go somewhere else?
I don't know. Yeah, because I understand what you mean, because I sometimes, I'm interested in some tech history. But yeah, you came out of the open source community and joined Microsoft, and I can imagine it felt like I'm helping them out to become a bit more like us, to show them and to show indeed like-minded people that Microsoft can actually bring that. And I think seeing the history there with everything that happened, I think you joined right after the first open source project, which was MVC or not?
No, I was there when we were doing that. I actually met Scott Guthrie. I had known him from being an MVP and an RD, a regional director. Mm-hmm. So the Microsoft has these influencer programs, and I was a member of those. And I met him at a thing called Foo Camp, Friends of O'Reilly. And it was Tim O'Reilly of O'Reilly Media having a party. And it was weird. Like, I'm not a name dropper, to be clear, so apologies ahead of time. But like, Elon Musk was there showing early Tesla prototypes. And, you know, Sergey, what's his name, from Google, landed his helicopter on the back lawn, you know, and then also me. So it was just totally ridiculous. I was just wandering around.
It's a movie scene. And
yeah, I just like, and that guy's here too.
Tony Stark, but, and Hanselman.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Tony Stark and then another guy. Who's that? Yeah, so I was there, and then I was talking to Guthrie, and he was thinking about Ruby on Rails and open source, and, you know, and I ended up joining, and that was the time when like Phil Hack and folks were thinking about Model View Controller, and the Microsoft had already tried to open source .NET before, but they called it Rotor, R-O-T-O-R. But it wasn't open source, it was source opened, right? It was a zip file of source that was read-only, but there were no takebacks. So trying to teach legal and teach all the lawyers how to be open by default instead of closed by default. So that Microsoft was closed by default. Like, anytime you wanted to open source something, it was like an event. But now I think that the thing that we should be proud of, you know, all of us that have worked so hard at Microsoft to be an open source, isn't necessarily just open sourcing .NET and making it cross-platform, but it's making Microsoft think about opening things by default. And then even stupid things like 3D Movie Maker that I was able to help open source a couple months ago, because why not?
Yeah, I can imagine by now you have some runbooks ready to how to do that. But in the beginning, especially fighting legal of a company like that, it's who would try that?
Well, people like, you know, Miguel and Glenn Block and Scott Hunter and just all those, a whole team of like-minded people who just were like, gosh, this doesn't have to be like this. And support from leadership and, you know, all these different things. But once the snowball started rolling, we were pretty good situation.
And what do you think if that never happened? Or you couldn't punch through somehow, or what would Microsoft would look completely different, I think. Would the ecosystem
look like IBM?
Yeah. So not there, or what?
Well, no. It'd just be a big lumbering legacy enterprise thing. Yeah. But the reason that I like Microsoft is that it has a lot of products. Like, without naming other products' names, like there are people that go to the various, you know, fangs and such, and it feels like they basically have like one or two products. And if I didn't like working on the product I'm working on, I could go work on Xbox, or I could work on Dynamics, or I could work on Office, or I could work on, there's like 50,000 things I could work on at Microsoft. So it's not one giant 100,000 person company. It is, you know, hundreds of thousand person companies, little kind of mid-sized companies with a collective goal. So I like the diversity of stuff I can work on.
If I look at when .NET Core from his early previews and betas, and that was kind of a riot, let's say that, or ASP.NET there. It really looked like you were also with Damien Edwards, and like felt like a startup with those weekly stand-ups and stuff within Microsoft. It felt so weird that this, like, this was the biggest part of Microsoft I was dealing with. It's like both Azure and like a dev stack. But now it's ran by guys like us. It felt like that. And there are a few there, and this feels like they just thought of, oh, just switch on the camera and let's have this discussion. It felt so completely alien for me that would be allowed within the Microsoft I knew from before. I was also a time before even the whole stack. I was on the other side of that and maybe a bit too opinionated sometimes. but yeah, it was crazy to see that. I can imagine that this just grew, that it wasn't really planned out. Or were people actually really making room for you to do that?
I mean, these things grew because there were things that didn't exist the first time we tried to open source .NET. Like GitHub didn't exist. We had CodePlex. We had SourceForge. But Git itself as a collaborative, like Git is basically FTP for code. You know, we were pushing patch files around before. I was using CVS, you know, and you'd hand me a .patch file. That was not really collaborative. So Git itself made a big difference. GitHub made a big difference. But also like-minded people, right? You said guys like us, but also guys and gals. Our current VP, Amanda Silver, is really, really innovative in a way that she thinks about how to do Visual Studio. Then we have Visual Studio Code happening. And then, of course, Julia Lewson, who has been at Microsoft 30 years this couple of months ago. And I actually took her on a tour of the Microsoft archives, which is pretty cool. Turns out she actually wrote code on Microsoft Access. So I've got two VPs that have written code. They're not just suits or administrators, you know, and that's also meaningful. So it's one thing to have like some boss that has a suit that comes in every once in a while and says suit things. But to have like Amanda's a compiler nerd and Julia like worked on Visual Basic and Visual Interdev and like wrote code for those things means that I'm led by developers. So then selling the idea of open source to executives that work in development is a much easier push, if that makes sense.
That makes sense. Yeah, definitely.
Now, fast forward a couple of years. And when you started at Microsoft, you just said you thought that would be a certain period of time. And then now you're keynoting Build. So there's a little bit of difference between joining a company and thinking I'll just be there for a couple of years, and now hosting one of the world, I think the biggest developer conference, maybe even at all, but at least as far as Microsoft goes, I can imagine that was a different story.
Well, I mean, keynoting Build is more of a I'm representing the team. Or like speaking at a developer conference, there's two ways to do it. You're either presenting work that you did, like, look at this thing that I did, that's really cool. You know, you're making a declarative statement, like, here's a thing that I think that you should think also. or in the context of something like Build or Ignite or TechEd, you're acting as a spokesperson. So it's more of a position that I take with very, very seriously, if that makes sense. So like I speak at conferences all the time. I was in Switzerland last week and I was talking about, you know, stuff I thought was cool. So it's Scott speaking as Scott. But if I speak at Build, I'm representing 1,000 developers that worked really hard for Julia. You know, I'm speaking on behalf of 1,000 developers that worked really hard on behalf of Julia and Amanda to build something. And then we can't put 1,000 developers on stage, right? And so how do you pick someone to talk about that, right? So I really take it seriously to represent their work well so that their hard work comes through. So then we work harder, we put on stories. I don't know if you ever saw a couple of years ago, we did an episode of The Office. It was like a fake TV show as a keynote.
Yeah.
Like doing something innovative like that isn't just to be goofy. It's to get people to watch and then see the stories and then see the products and then go, oh, that's cool. And then that gets back to the original part at the beginning of the podcast about what am I doing? I'm telling people, here's a cool thing that you didn't know existed. You should go check it out. It'll make you more powerful. So there's really no difference between the way that I go and teach people about Visual Studio and the way that I tell them about like a Wi-Fi modem for a Commodore 64, it's like, yo, this is so cool. That's like, that's the whole vibe.
Yeah. And that's, I think, the best vibe there is. Oscar, do you know what time it is?
Is it time for a totally random question?
It is time for a totally random question. Scott, what bends your mind every time you think about it?
What bends my mind? I don't know what that means.
Well,
like,
if you think about it, that you still think, oh wow, that this is out there, or that this is the case, or that
stop thinking about it, it drives me crazy.
Oh, I mean, I would just say the fact that I haven't like rebooted this computer in like 46 days. Like, I mean, just the fact that we're here right now, right? Like, there's that one fellow who said, computers are just rocks that we infused with lightning and made them think.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, we're sitting here, and I look down, and I've got my mini tower, and it's got LEDs and stuff. I've got three monitors. I'm looking at you in 4K across multiple monitors. I'm recording in two different places. I've got this device talking to USB, talking to 15 other USB devices. The whole thing is stable. It just works fine. It's a miracle it works at all.
Yeah, like I have with bugs sometimes. Like, why doesn't it work? And then later it's like, why does this even work? All this, what's beneath it? It's crazy that it...
Yeah, and then somewhere in the room, there's this Commodore 64 with a Y modem.
Well, another thing, when you think about just like, how does it even work? I'm pulling this out of my pocket right here. I've got an insulin pump.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So this is a very old insulin pump. This is not a modern insulin pump with a touchscreen. This looks like a Nokia phone, right? This has a gray green LED, you know, LCD screen. This thing hasn't crashed in 16 years.
Not once.
Right? So if you think not once, like this thing works, right? It doesn't crash. It doesn't freak out. It is, you know, partially waterproof. It is resistant to static electricity. It is resistant to pressure. I've flown all over the world with this thing. So that's another way of thinking about software. So while we're out there trying to figure out how to put text boxes over data with React, right?
Yeah.
And then we're like, yeah, that didn't work. And then we push F12. And then, you know, like if you ever go to a web page right now and you just like, it works and you check out of the shopping cart. But if you push F12 and look at the console, every website is filled with red errors and exceptions.
Yeah.
And it still works. And I still was able to buy that thing. But this insulin pump hasn't had a problem in almost 2 decades. Very, very different ways of thinking about software. You know, we have patch zero, like 0 day patches. So someone releases a game like Gears of War, they put it on a disc, they ship it.
Yep.
And then the day it comes out, there's a 5 gig patch.
Yeah, it's 40 gig download. Yeah.
But my insulin pump has not changed since like 1987.
And it still works.
That bends my mind.
I think that is a terrific answer.
Thank you.
Yes.
Scott, I know you're short on time. Is there anything you want to get back at or that we forgot to mention that we really need to address in this podcast?
I am a little sad that more people aren't blogging and creating content, and that the argument is that they don't have time.
Mm-hmm.
So I would love to see more people write less email and take those keystrokes and put them in blog posts. And I'd like to see more people like yourselves, you know, lending your privilege to other people and have them on your podcast. So like the fact that we're even having a chat is good on you, because you could have called me, both of you, and said, hey, Scott, can we pick your brain? And then we would just chat for an hour and then we would leave. But you recorded it and you added cool music and then you'll have a transcript after and then everybody wins. So I would just encourage more people to think about putting themselves out there a little bit more and then also lending their voices to others. So
I think a nice addition to that one is you never have time. You make time. On that one, Scott.
Deep, Rick. Sorry.
That was very deep. Rick is all like, let's bring it down.
Yeah. With his voice.
Thank you so very much for being our guest. It was awesome talking to you. Thanks.
Thank you. See you around.
Oh, yeah, actually, I have an idea.
Oh, what?
The show is called Beta Bits, right?
Beta Talks.
You say beta.
Beta Talks.
Beta Talks,
yeah.
Beta Talks. So, you know, at the end of my podcast, like, this has been another episode of Beta Talks.
Ooh. Nice.
So we switch end credits. It's been
Hansel. This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and we'll see you again next week.
We can do that outro.
Yeah, the guys recorded
let's
it.
Let's
so
switch them.
It's we fun. Should be good to go. Thanks. Thank you for listening to Beta Talks, the podcast. We publish a new episode every 2 weeks.
You can find us on all the major streaming platforms like Spotify and iTunes.
See you next time.
Bye.